Charm of Favor, Chapter 15.
How do you feel about getting out of D.C. for a while? Asked Mike. My heart is hurting. I never make good choices when I'm like this, said Lucy, brushing her delicate hands over the artwork down her left upper arm. Baby, I love you more than breathing, you know that. I just can't go back to lose and play. It doesn't feel right. Someone in that place that night followed Seth down the street and gunned him down. For what? For what? Politics? Who do these people think they are? Said Mike, swinging his fist into the air in front of him. He said it. He was scared of the Democrats, of Hillary. She was rigging the primary, and he knew about it. Maybe he said something to the wrong people. I don't know, said Lucy, wiping beneath her swollen eyes and sniffling. Do you think he was scared? I think he was pissed. Richie doesn't scare easily. But he did say he thought Foster had been murdered. Maybe you're right. Maybe that's all the more reason we should get out of here for a while, said Mike. Where would we go? We don't know anyone outside of this city, said Lucy. Hollywood. We could go to California, Beverly Hills. Let's get out of this stinking place and take the act on the road. We can get gigs out there, said Mike. Whatever you say, sweetie. I will go wherever with you, said Lucy, reaching for his shoulders and leaning against him. Okay, it's settled. I'll try to organize everything and see if James or Rocky can help. Who knows? It's got to be better than this, said Mike as he gently held her and rocked her slowly, drawing the scent of her jet-black hair into his nostrils and closing his eyes. The non-stop flight to LAX was actually very smooth. James burned some of his frequent flyer miles to get them a good price, and they loaded 6 road cases with clothes and sound equipment. One never knew how a musical act would be received when cold calling venues in Southern California. One thing is for sure, all the great acts seemed to get their breaks in Los Angeles. James got us a little suite at the Four Seasons in Santa Monica. It's not far from here. They have free breakfast and an indoor swimming pool, said Mike as they waited for the cases to drop at LAX's baggage claim 5. I miss Maddie, said Lucy, hugging Mike's arm as the carousel warning buzzer sounded. Yeah, me too. She's much better at meeting new people than me, that's for sure, said Mike. Not that I'm in any kind of hurry, but where do we start? What's your plan, Mr. Russo? Asked Lucy. Well, it's probably just like D.C. Well, not like D.C., but I mean, it's all about the parties. It's all about getting seen and maybe doing some open mic stuff to get noticed. If we are as good as we say we are, we should be able to get a shot somewhere. How does anybody do it? Let's just get ready to work hard. Besides, my dad used to say, hard work was the good of this world. When you get paid by the hour, what does it matter if you dig a ditch and then fill it in again, said Mike. My mother said, the idle mind is the devil's workshop, said Lucy. I think that came out before your mother. I love her, but she doesn't get the credit for that one, said Mike, moving as he noticed the first of their cases coming down the baggage conveyor. It was an hour before they got checked in, tipped the staff for helping with the cases, and the door clicked shut. Mike wrapped his arms around her and swayed to a song in his head in the silence of the suite. They have unlimited hot water, you know, said Mike. I was just thinking the same thing. 5 hours in a plane leaves something on your skin, you know? Like 300 people breathing on you. And I'm hungry. God, how do they expect people to sit there for that long with only pretzels and Diet Coke? I thought they used to have peanuts, said Lucy, relaxing into his silent song. Somebody on the plane must have had an allergy, said Mike, not letting go. One person. Ruins lunch for everyone? Asked Lucy. Last one in, said Mike, releasing his arms and peeling his loafers off with a toe behind each heel. Oh, my God. It feels like I haven't showered in a week. How come we don't have a shower head like this? Asked Lucy, letting her long black hair soak up the hot rain coming down from the ceiling-mounted fixture. Because our electric bill would be $1,000 a month, said Mike as he squeezed the shower gel into the hair on his chest and drew her into him, scrubbing her back with his body. Yeah, and we'd have 3 kids by now, said Lucy, closing her eyes and letting the water soothe her eyes, still tender from days of weeping. Hey, can't blame a guy for trying, said Mike. Such a boy, she said, feeling a whimper shake her body as she took a deep breath in memory of Seth. I love you. We're going to be all right. If you want, we'll scoot up to Hollywood and take a look around and have some dinner later on. Maybe we can hit a few clubs and see if we can get a gig, said Mike. Yeah, no sense laying around here naked and watching old movies for a few days, said Lucy, turning to face him and letting her breasts scrub into his soapy chest. I like old movies, said Mike, kissing her while the water ran over their closed eyes and around their lips. The king-size bed welcomed them as they made love and slept in a curled position on the bedspread. The television sound barely covered the silence in the room as they fed one another with love and healed and slept. He rocked her softly when he woke, and within a few minutes she took a deep breath like a flower coming through the spring soil and stretched her legs until they quivered. You ready for some heels and skinny jeans? He whispered into her neck. You read my mind, my king. I am starving, said Lucy. Well, let's see what Hollywood is all about, shall we? Said Mike as he rolled onto his back, sat up, and scooted to the edge of the bed. She put her feet against his back and rolled her toes against his muscular shoulders and down his spine. You look like your brother from behind, said Lucy. You looked at my brother? Asked Mike whimsically. Rocky's built like a brick shithouse, baby, but I don't take to military types. My whole family is a long line of officers and gentlemen, but it's you who saved me, said Lucy. I got my dad's musical talent, but not much else, said Mike, standing up and shadow boxing for a few seconds. You got me, said Lucy, teasing him with her beautiful voice. Yes, I did. That and the air that I breathe is enough for me, said Mike, showing off his naked body by flexing his arms in front of her. Oh, that's original, said Lucy, smiling broadly at him. Come here, Mrs. Rousseau. I have something for you, said Mike. I can see that from here. Barely, said Lucy, giggling. He reached out his hand and pulled her to her bare feet and kissed her and held her. He stroked her hair with one hand and held her by the small of the back closely to him. I just want you to know we're supposed to be here. I can feel it, like the universe has the right sound. We're going to be okay, said Mike. I can feel you saving me again. Hollywood was not as busy as they anticipated when they emerged from the train station on Hollywood Boulevard. Grauman's Chinese Theater was within sight. It was nothing like Times Square. Rather, it looked like an ordinary small-town square with the exception of the brightly lit Hard Rock Cafe. Do my eyes deceive me? Said Mike, grabbing Lucy's hand and beginning to walk toward the intersection. You must have known. This is crazy, said Lucy, almost laughing. Didn't I say the universe was lining up? Asked Mike with a jump in his step. Yeah, but how often do they have karaoke at Hard Rock Cafe? Asked Lucy. All I know is that sign might as well say, back by popular demand, Lucy and Mike, said Mike. They walked through the front door and the atmosphere was classic. It was just after sunset and singing hadn't started yet. The place was about 1/3 full. The recorded music was loud and there were empty tables and booths, so they looked around for a hostess. Most of the tables had a small sign on them that read, Reserved. Welcome to the Hard Rock Cafe. Just the two of you? Asked the hostess. Yeah. Wow. Has anyone told you you look like... began Mike. Anne Hathaway? Yeah. Sometimes. This is my day job, said the hostess, smiling in her white blouse with the bottom tied in a knot to expose a set of rippling abs and the top of some kind of tattoo peeking out from under the waistband of her black yoga pants. She grabbed a couple of menus and headed for a booth close to the front windows. Hey, I noticed on the marquee outside that this is karaoke night. When does it start? Asked Mike, catching up to the hostess. It starts at 9, but the first hour or so is already booked. That's why you see all these reserved tables. They call it karaoke, but this is Hollywood. Singers are looking, bands are looking, and so are the agencies. Dancers are easy to find. Actors, well, I've been here for 2 years. I'm from Nebraska. I have a couple of commercials and never miss a chance to read, but great singers are not too easy to find. So management got this idea to throw a raw piece of meat out there for the customers to fight over. So far, you can't argue with success. Your server will be right with you, said the hostess. Thank you, said Mike, sliding in next to Lucy on the same seat of the booth. I think I see a flaw in your plan, said Lucy, folding her right hand into his left hand as they sat next to one another in the booth. The other side of this booth is empty? Asked Mike, looking into her eyes. No, there's no keyboard up there, said Lucy. I'm not worried about that, said Mike. But we're an act, you and me. I don't want to, began Lucy. I see a stand with wireless mics up there, said Mike, not taking his eyes off of her. His confidence always surprised her. And your point is? Asked Lucy, leaving the question open with her tone. Watch me pull a piano out of my hat, said Mike, using his index finger to point off to the side of the stage, not quite hidden by the curtain. Oh, my God, you're a genius. Have I told you I love you today? Asked Lucy, smiling and curling her lips against his ear. You screamed it a little while ago, as a matter of fact, said Mike, as she punched him in the shoulder and blushed. Hi, my name is Adam, and I'll be taking care of you tonight, said the waiter, wearing almost exactly the same outfit that the hostess was wearing, with the exception of the yoga pants. His black jeans and white shirt said Hollywood Hard Rock Cafe on the pockets. What's up, Adam? Said Lucy, smiling at his delicate face. You two, you look beautiful. Can I get you something to drink while you look at the menu? Asked Adam. I'll take a Bud Light on draft, and she'll have a Kettle One vodka martini with three olives up and dry, said Mike. Be right back, said Adam as he twirled in his plaid Vans and walked quickly back to the bar. The two of them looked the menu over and decided to split a sampler of the appetizers. Four more couples arrived, and the Anne Hathaway hostess took them to two large tables and snatched the reserve signs as they sat down. Two of the girls were dressed in show clothes with sequins, and two of the boys had bright-colored shirts with large collars. It was impossible to tell their ages from across the room, but they felt a little like the coin was about to be tossed for the big game. Here you go. Have you decided? Asked Adam. Yes, we have. Two things. First, we're going to split the sampler here with the potato skins and the Southwest burrito things. Second, how do we get our names on the list to sing tonight? Asked Mike. Oh, sweetie, have you ever been hooked? Asked Adam with an expressive look of concern on his face. Only on her, said Mike, glancing at Lucy. I mean gonged. This is like full contact karaoke, baby. If you're good, they will hook you off the stage. If you're really good, they might let you finish. If you're like X-Factor kick-ass, you can make the cut. You sure you want to try this? Asked Adam. Yes, they both said in unison. See that very large bouncer man over there with the black hat and black suit? He's a lot meaner than he looks, let me tell you. Tell him you want to sing, and that's the best I can do. I'll go get your order going, said Adam. He turned and walked away like he was afraid to be seen with them. Mike looked at Lucy without speaking. What? You're looking at me like you want me to give you an order or something, said Lucy. Let's go, said Mike, sliding out of the booth and holding his hand open for Lucy to join him. She stood in her heels and winked at Mike and slid her arm through his and put her slender hand on top of his wrist. The two of them locked eyes on the bouncer and headed his way. He was probably about 6'2" and had a neck as large as Lucy's waist. His shirt fit his power lifter shoulders well, and the collar had the look of custom tailoring. He was talking with another man dressed in a light-colored silk suit with what looked like chocolate-brown slippers made of woven leather. His tanned skin was accented by the black lights placed here and there in the restaurant and the substantial gold chain bracelet he wore on his wrist. His hair was combed back, but not slicked down, the result of years of styling and expensive products. As they approached, the bouncer looked at Mike and then switched his eyes to Lucy's perfect shape. "What can I do for you fine people?" said the bouncer in a voice that had seen too many loud nightclubs. "I'm Mike. This is my wife, Lucy. We want to perform for you tonight," said Mike. "You sing? Together?" asked the bouncer. "Actually, she does the singing. I play the keyboard," said Mike. "A piano player?" asked the bouncer. "A pianist, actually," said Lucy, locking eyes with the bouncer for a long moment. It was her superpower. She developed when she was 14 years old after going through $40 worth of her mother's makeup to find the right colors and the right presentation to be able to melt the man's heart with a single glance from 20 paces. Up close, all men were defenseless. "Whatever," said the bouncer without any detectable weakness. He pulled out his phone and thumbed a few commands on the screen. "I have a spot at 10:20. What song do you want to perform?" "And before you say anything, I got Adele-itis," said the bouncer, dropping his phone to his side. "My immortal," said Lucy, not breaking her gaze. The bouncer tilted his head slightly on his enormous neck like her powers had reached him, cracked the armor, like hot metal was running down his back behind the chain mail of his suit. "We haven't had that spirit here for a while." "Okay. 10:20. You're on your own there," said the bouncer, pointing at Mike. "Don't you worry about me. Just make sure the mic volume is turned up as far as you can handle it," said Mike, amazed at watching Lucy hook this man like 275 pounds of grade A beef on the hoof. The corners of his mouth flattened slightly, almost like he was about to smile. "This act got a name?" asked the bouncer, hovering his thumbs over the backlit screen in front of his eyes. "Lucy and Mike. That's enough, right?" asked Mike. "Okay, Mike, bring what you got. Enjoy your evening, Lucy," he said, touching the narrow brim of his black felt hat. "I have one more question, sir, if you don't mind," said Lucy, blinking deeply, setting the hook deep into his soul. "I got time," said the bouncer. "Who was the other guy in the suit?" asked Lucy. "That would be one Mr. D. If your balls are really this brass, he's got people," said the bouncer. "Like an audition?" asked Mike. "Like an introduction. It's all about introductions in this town. Unless you like writing checks, which, by looking at you two, I don't see that kind of bulge in your pocket," said the bouncer, losing his smile completely. "See you at 10:20, said Lucy, gently placing her hand on the bouncer's forearm and smiling like she still had cards to play. The bouncer looked toward the door as another group of three girls came in the front door. The hostess greeted them, began walking, and the girls flowed to another reserved table. Mike and Lucy walked back to their booth just as the food server arrived with Adam at the table. "Did you make the list?" asked Adam as he motioned for the server to put the appetizer sampler on the table. "Thank you. Yes, we get to sing at 10:20, said Mike. "You were right. He's tougher than he looks," said Lucy, winking at Adam. He smiled and silently clapped his hands together with delight. "Oh, that's good. We're open till 2 a.m., and by then the place is packed to the glass. If you do well enough, you'll make the cut," said Adam. "What cut?" asked Mike, sliding in next to Lucy and taking a sip from his beer. "The final four," said Adam. "They take 100 singers and knock it down to 4? Then what?" asked Mike. "You never know. I've seen Simon Cole, I've seen Nicole Scherzinger stop in for these finals. Some of the music agents and even movie producers come by from time to time. Mr. D calls them if something magic is happening," said Adam. "Anybody ever make it big?" asked Mike. "It takes more than a great voice to make it in this town," said Adam. "We're from D.C. Can't be any worse than that town, said Mike. It's all the same rite of passage. Let me know if you need anything else, okay? Said Adam, smiling like he was accepting an Oscar. Thanks, Adam. We will, said Lucy. The food looked amazing and tasted even better as they sat in the booth and watched the people come in. By 9 o'clock, the floor and the mezzanine tables were full, and the music could barely cover the hum of conversation in the Hollywood hotspot. It was just the right amount of food, without pushing Lucy's lungs out of the way. I knew I was hungry, but that was really good, said Mike. Yeah, I love the little popper things. You have to learn how to make those, said Lucy. I think I could figure it out. You like that spicy stuff. You want another drink? Asked Mike, motioning to Adam, bouncing up and down near the bar. I would love to have a grapefruit juice on the rocks, said Lucy, rubbing his shoulder with her hands. Another beer? How about Lucy? Said Adam. If you have pink grapefruit juice on ice, that would be great. And yes, I'll have another, said Mike, sliding his empty glass toward Adam. All of a sudden, the restaurant began to clap, and Mike and Lucy looked toward the stage. The spotlight came down from a booth up on the second floor, and a tall, slender black man in a shiny silver suit smiled to the crowd. His face was smooth like flat bronze, and his eyes were surrounded with orange and red and blue shades of makeup. His hair was blonde and sculpted into a flawless flat top, and his earrings sparkled silvers of light into the large room. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Hollywood's own Hard Rock Cafe. I am your host, Pauline, for this evening's live event. The restaurant clapped as though someone flashed a sign for the television audience. This is no ordinary karaoke. Star Search ain't got nothing on Hard Rock Hollywood, let me tell you, darlings, he said, twerking his hips to the syllables. I have a full card tonight. One song and one song only for each of tonight's talents. And this is absolutely an audience participation event. Oh, and one more thing. If you sing too much like the original artist, you might hear this sound, said Pauline as a recorded foghorn blared through the deep sound system. You cheer, they sing. Got it? Again, the place thundered with applause. On the screens around the club, you will see a short list of names. This is the order of tonight's singers. If your name is on that list, you come down to stage left at the bottom of the stairs. My girls will get you ready and make sure you don't trip going up the stairs. If you know someone on that list, get your devices ready to send your friend out to the world on your favorite media. You all got that? Asked Pauline. Again, the building shook with clapping and whistles. Very good, my people. The Hard Rock Final Four will perform at midnight, so don't leave early. You must be present to win. Now, let's get ready for showtime. Again, 10 minutes and counting. Mr. DJ Hollywood, may I have the first names on the screen now, shouted Pauline, as the sound system took his voice and electronically echoed it and flanged it to sound like a metal robot. The first names appeared on the flat screens all over the club, and the people clapped again as Pauline danced off the stage and down the steps into the crowd by the bar. Wow! Talk about no pressure, said Lucy. I like it. It's pretty well done, actually, said Mike. Yeah, easy for you to say, said Lucy, squeezing his arm with her cold hands. I have an idea when our time comes, said Mike. You're going to get me hooked, said Lucy, sticking out her bottom lip. They won't hook you, I promise, said Mike. All the singers were good. Whether it was to make the competition try harder or to go through a list of songs normally too large to fit into 4 hours, it was hard to say. The foghorn took out some fine voices that just sounded too much like the original artist. It was easy to see the influence of televised talent shows emphasizing the interpretation of a song, rather than just covering it really well. It was 10 o'clock before their names came up on the screen. They had each been performing for a few years, but it was hard not to feel the pressure of the moment, of the atmosphere, of this city for something live and amazing. Don't hold back, said Mike, close to her ear to overcome the lyrics of Bruno Mars pouring smoothly from the speakers. Am I your queen? She said back to him against his ear. I am your humble servant king, he nearly shouted. Then kneel before me, she laughed. Let's show 'em how it's done back east, said Mike, holding his hand out flat to invite her to slap it. She walked two fingers across his hand slowly and then pretended to slap his face. I can feel the universe shifting on its axis, she said, looking him in the eyes like he was the only person in the room. We have 3 minutes and 6 seconds to change the world, said Mike. Plenty of time, she said. More than enough, he said quickly. Even eggs take 3 minutes, you know, she laughed. Okay, you two. Break a leg, just not on my steps, okay? Use the handrail. You good? Asked the girl, managing the 5 steps leading up to the stage. Yeah, we're good. Thanks, said Mike, leaning over to her to be heard without shouting. The song ended, but the applause went on for about 20 seconds. The young boy with the bright red shirt and yellow slacks came bouncing down the stairs with a smile on his face. He fanned his face with his hands from the heat of the lights and the fact that this time, at least, he was allowed to finish the entire song. Mike shot up the stairs ahead of Lucy and in a dozen rapid steps snatched one of the mics off the stand and slid into the bench seat of the front of the piano. Mike knew the music. She knew the song. Before a recorded karaoke version could start, Mike launched into the composition with power and grace of a concert pianist at the Hollywood Bowl. Lucy arrived at the other mic as the lights lowered and the silver spots sliced through from the ceiling and struck her perfect skin and the perfect art, and then she began to sing. The DJ never started the recorded music because Mike's piano came straight through the speakers. The mic lying beside him on the bench drank the harmonics from his skillful hands and nourished the souls in that room. I'm so tired of being here, suppressed by all my childish fears, and if you have to leave, I wish that you would just leave, 'cause your presence still lingers here, and it won't leave me alone. The audience was stunned at first. The people had heard great piano before. They had heard Streisand, Adele, Crow, but they had never heard the silky power of Lucy Rousseau. It wasn't just a voice, and with that much power and the rehearsed passion of Mike synchronized with her, it realized the emotion of Amy Lee's heart in her rendition, and he commanded the power of this moment. No one had ever heard anything like it. No one could breathe until Lucy pulled the mic slightly from her deep red lips for a moment to inhale. When you cried, I wipe away all of your tears. When you scream, I'd fight away all of your fears. And I held your hand through all of these years, but you still have all of me. The applause began like a giant window breaking. It crashed against the tile floor and challenged the sound pressure itself. Each line came from the speakers like one fireworks finale after another, numbing the senses with its perfection, overwhelming the soul with its beauty. No one would ever forget this night. It was the first time and the last time anyone in that room ever truly heard that song. DJ Hollywood leaned forward to his mixing board microphone and switched it on for a rare appearance. That was all you. Everyone, give it up for Lucy and Mike. As though the applause ever stopped, it got louder as Lucy slid the mic back into the stand and Mike did the same. He gripped her hand and raised it into the air as she posed for a moment in her jeans and heels, and then turned toward the stairs, and they left the stage. Christ, that was good. Well done, you two, said the stair manager as she held out her hand to help them on the last step. She hugged Lucy lightly, and Mike looked at the crowd gathering in front of them. He shook hands with several people and thanked several more. He wasn't looking for the booth. He was looking for a light-colored suit. The next song began within seconds, and the crowd began to thin as faces turned away from them and toward the stage. Lucy caught up with him in a few steps, and they walked slowly back to their booth. "I'm thirsty now," said Mike, sliding into the booth and picking up his half-glass of beer. "What's this?" said Lucy, picking up a folded index card from the table in front of them. "Is it one of those reservation things?" asked Mike, swallowing the remaining contents of his beer. "It's just got a number 2 on it. This is some kind of fancy stationery. Looks like an invitation, but, said Lucy, looking at it from all sides. "Hey, you two, I had no idea who you were," said Adam as he approached the booth. "That was fun, huh?" asked Lucy, smiling at him. "I could use another beer. You have any more of that grapefruit juice?" asked Mike. "Oh, hell yes. That was smoking hot. Can I get you anything else?" asked Adam. "Yeah, one thing. This was on the table when we got back. Is this something we should pay attention to?" asked Lucy, handing it to Adam. He ran his slender fingers over the embossed cover and flipped it over. "Don't let anyone else see this. There would be many deaths," said Adam with a coy smile on his face. "This is Mr. D's personal invitation," said Adam, looking over his shoulder and handing it back to Lucy. "To what?" asked Lucy. "The final four at midnight. But usually everyone just hangs out and gets hammered because they don't get called up for the finals. You were picked second, and they don't want you to leave, so they drop this on your table. You're in, baby," said Adam. The next 90 minutes churned 20 singers through the hard rock machine. There were a few foghorns with crying groups of girls and touches of support like pro basketball players missing free throws. This was not a weekly event, or even monthly, so some of these voices would never again get a chance like this. Mike switched to water to keep his fingers from making a mistake. Lucy hummed softly to make sure her voice was still there. It felt more like a tough man contest than a show. It was the strain behind the curtain, far from the red carpet and the brass trophies. It was the work behind the entertainment industry. It separated success from the slurry of talent in this town. It was the reason why the stars returned year after year. It was the reason why so many others walk away while they still have their soul. "Okay, hard rockers, are you ready for the final four?" asked Pauline as he sashayed onto the stage like a showgirl in shimmering silver suit. The crowd was pressing the stage now, looking more like a small concert than a Hollywood Boulevard restaurant. The music sounded like a movie score. It swelled with horns and strings while the computerized stage lights panned and flashed from color to color, shifting the silver suit into a dancing neon sign, drawing all of the attention to the man with the microphone, to a large white envelope flashing in his hands. "Will these four contestants make their way to the stage besides me?" he asked as he opened and unfolded the envelope. "I need Eric, Lucy, Shamela, and Carmen to come up and join me on our Hollywood Hard Rock stage," said Pauline as short gas red flames shot up from the stands at the sides of the stage. The crowd roared with the choices being revealed. "Go get 'em, my queen," said Mike, letting go of her hand and urging her toward the stage. I don't want to go without you," she said, without the sound reaching him over the din of the speakers. "You are never without me," said Mike, putting his two fingers under his eyes and pointing them at her. Reluctantly, slowly, she turned and walked toward the stage. People formed a human hallway for her as she flipped her long black hair over her right shoulder to reveal her magnificent artwork wrapping around her left shoulder. She wished she had a gown to take their view off her eyes. She walked with grace on her heels to the stage steps and floated up to the stage next to Pauline. He was tall and electric as he smiled at her, scanned her with his blazing eyes, and welcomed her with a kiss into the air beside her face. If you thought it was fun getting this far, wait until you get a load of this, said Pauline, smiling to the crowd, filling in against the chest-high railing in front of the stage. Mike stood beside his table so she could focus on him. We will display 10 songs from Billboard's top female and male artists on the screen for each contestant. Each of you will pick a song from that list. DJ Hollywood will cue that music, and you must perform that song. You, my hard rock darlings, will choose the winner. Are we ready? Asked Pauline. The crowd clapped and whistled over what sounded like a much larger audience. Three of you may be seated in our row of fame while Eric performs for us, said Pauline, displaying the row of four golden chairs at the rear of the stage. The crowd lowered their hands and their voices while the screens flashed like a slot machine. In a few seconds, 10 male artist and 10 female artist songs displayed in two columns. Eric chooses, said Pauline, pointing his microphone wand at his chin. Too Good at Goodbyes, Sam Smith, said Eric, and the crowd yelled their approval. Good luck, Eric, said Pauline with a smile as he retreated stage left and out of the lights. The lights changed and the spotlight narrowed against his torso as he smiled and waited for the music to start. He brought the mic to his mouth and began to dance and sing while barely looking at the words. Within seconds, the crowd began to cheer and clap. He hit the notes and delivered the song like he wrote it and had rehearsed it 1,000 times, only this time it was being streamed by hundreds of cell phones, watched by talent agencies, producers, and bands all over the world. This was his time, and he didn't waste a moment of it. When he finished, the crowd was there for him. He smiled, they cheered, but everyone knew it could have been more. Excellent, Eric. Really great, darling, said Pauline, reaching him just as the music and the crowd subsided. He shook his hand and took the mic from him, and Eric took his seat next to Lucy. Lucy, you're up next. I have not seen you before, baby. Where are you from? Asked Pauline, putting the mic in her hand. Oh, thank you for asking, Pauline. I'm from D.C., said Lucy, as the spot expanded to cover both of them. There were a couple of shouts from the audience in support, and she smiled and waved politely. Looks like you're making fans quickly out here in movie land. DJ Hollywood, may I have the list of songs for Lucy? Asked Pauline, raising his hand in the air. Look what you made me do, Taylor Smith, said Lucy into her mic, and the crowd erupted. She knew this song was a changeover for Taylor. She had sung along with it before and knew in her heart that the hottest female artist in the Western world had left something on the table, and she was determined to find it. Break a leg, Lucy, said Pauline as he bounced to the side of the stage. The crowd was quiet, almost muttering as the music began. She flicked her head, bringing her silky black hair forward to cover half her face. She arched her back and leaned into the mic, nearly touching her lips with it. The words came quickly and clearly, while her heels cut shapes over the stage. She spun and sang to the crowd. She brought her superpower eye contact into each of the phones watching her, caressing the camera and controlling her breath like a bow being drawn across her flawless vocal cords. She could see Taylor in her mind, looking up from her manicure, listening for the pieces she could not find in the recording studio. In the interlude, the crowd reached higher for something. She was loving them, and they could feel it. She reached out with her free hand and spun on her heel and played the strings the universe had laid around her like a cosmic harp. The world moves on, another day, another drama. But not for me, not for me. All I think about is karma. And then the world moves on, but one thing's for sure. Maybe I got mine, but you'll all get yours. The chorus was repetitious, but there was a space there, and flew like a bird through the melody, almost sounding like she was singing a duet in thirds. The music faded along with the words, and the crowd exploded. They were screaming and clapping and whistling. Mike folded his hands in front of his belt buckle. She was beyond flawless and formless, like the song itself. Oh, my Lord, that was beautiful, Lucy. Lucy, everyone, from D.C., said Pauline, fluttering his hand in front of his face like he was fighting back tears of joy. Thank you, Hard Rock. Thank you, said Lucy into the mic, and she handed it back to Pauline. The crowd was relentless, chanting, Lucy, Lucy, while they clapped in unison. Mike met her at the base of the stairs, and she shuddered in his embrace. She was his queen, but she was like a dove in his arms. They shook hands and smiled as they walked slowly back to the booth by the front windows. There were two singers to go, but it was inconsequential. Lucy had won the Final Four contest at Hollywood's Hard Rock Cafe. It was all they could take for one night, as their biological clock said it was 4 a.m. It was then that a hand touched his shoulder. He turned to look up into the eyes of the bouncer. Mr. D would like the pleasure of your company. There's a limo outside, said the bouncer. We haven't paid yet, said Mike, reaching for his wallet. Winners never pay in this town, said the bouncer, and he pointed to the door. Go on, I got this. It was cool at nearly 1 o'clock when they stepped outside onto the nearly empty sidewalk of Hollywood Boulevard. The black limousine was stretched slightly, and the driver opened the rear door for them as he looked up at the bouncer in the alcove of the Hard Rock Cafe. Mike let Lucy get in first, and he slid in beside her on the smooth leather couch. There were two young girls sitting on the opposite couch inside, one dressed in a black jumpsuit and the other in a short print dress with laced high heels. The girl in the black jumpsuit looked slightly Asian and asked if they would like a drink. They both accepted miniature bottles of water and tried to relax as the vehicle began moving. Hi, said the young girl in the dress. My name is Alani, she said politely, shaking their hands. I'm Mike. This is my wife, Lucy. Do you know where we're going? Asked Mike, not trying to sound suspicious. You've been invited to Mr. Goodman's party. It's not far, said the Asian staffer. What do you do, Alani? Asked Lucy, clearing her throat a little after singing so hard. I'm an actor, said Alani, quietly glancing at the staffer, who looked out the window. Oh, wow! I've never met an actor before, said Lucy, trying to loosen the quiet atmosphere a little. I'm getting ready to work on my first feature film. I've done a few music videos, said Alani, brushing her hand through her light brown hair that hung straight around her shoulders. Her skin was perfect, over-pronounced cheekbones and around her light red lips and her square chin. She didn't look a day over 17, and she was alone. We sing. Well, Lucy sings. I play, said Mike, not wanting to give a full resume. Yes, we saw you. The whole world saw you. And that's not easy. So much pressure in that place. It's like, boom, you're live. Most people crack a little up there. You were great, both of you, said the Asian staffer, smiling and looking back and forth between them. Mr. D called us to pick you up, she said. How did you meet Mr. Goodman? Asked Lucy, looking at Alani. I haven't. Not yet. An agent saw me at a casting call. She took a picture, and he asked for me tonight. They sent the limo, so here I am, said Alani. I'm sure your family is excited, said Lucy. Oh, yeah. It's been my dream since I was little to be an actor, said Alani, adding a tiny laugh at the end. The limo lurched softly as it turned into the driveway and the gates swung open automatically. The gate was black iron with a large W welded in the center. The drive was lined with low lighting and a backlit pond shimmering from the waterfall circulating into it. This is Mr. Goodman's Hollywood home. He arrived from New York last week to review some scripts and meet with some politicians. There is always something happening in Hollywood. It's kind of late for us, actually. We just came from D.C. today. Not that I'm anxious to leave, but do you know how long we're going to be here? Asked Mike, trying to keep the schedule in his mind. Oh, not to worry. You can leave any time. Or there are 20 guest rooms between two guest houses here on the grounds. You're free to spend the night and leave when you wish tomorrow, said the staffer. The car came to a stop, and a doorman with a short-sleeved shirt opened the right-hand door. The four of them stepped out onto the covered driveway that looked like the entry to a hotel. The large potted ferns were healthy, and the wide stairs led up the double doors with full-length glass side windows on either side. The door opened from the inside, and they could smell the light aroma of pot and heard soft music coming from the inside. The hallway was about 12 feet wide, and they walked down a step and then another into a large room with the entire outside wall made of glass. There were about 20 people out on the covered patio, and there was a flickering gas fire pit surrounded by stone benches draped with a Western print rug. The staffer motioned for them to join the others as she walked into the serving area of the large kitchen. There was a large screen that flickered with a replay of Lucy's performance, and they clapped as they noticed her and Mike walk through the open sliding glass doors onto the patio. Lucy smiled shyly, and Mike shook hands. Alani was close by Mike's side, and he could feel her sense of abandonment. Hey, everyone, this is Mike and Lucy. Wow, what a voice, huh? And this must be Alani. You're much prettier in person. Are you thirsty? There's anything you want. We have some shrimp cocktail there, and there's some veggies over there. If we don't have it, just say the word. I wanted to meet you. That was a hell of a performance out there tonight, said Harvey Goodman. Thank you, Mr. Goodman, said Lucy. Harvey, please call me Harvey. These are Sony's people, screenwriters over there, and these guys are all CGI concept designers, not the hackers. I'm talking about the real 3D set designers. But you know, at the end of the day, it's not the set, it's the actor that wins the Oscar. Am I right? Said Harvey to the patio full of sycophants. And the script. Don't forget the words, Harvey, said one of the screenwriters. I know. But I give you the character. You just write the words for him to say. But Affleck is always Affleck and Willis is always Willis. You know what I'm saying? Asked Harvey. Oh, come on, Harvey. Streep, Hanks, and how about the Fanning girls, huh? Come on, said the screenwriter. Okay. There is a difference between being a movie star and an actor. I agree. The point is that it is not a film unless the producer says it's a film. That's all I'm saying, said Harvey, pointing to his own nose and pouring some sparkling water into a tumbler with a few chunks of ice. You can't argue with success, Harvey, said the screenwriter as everyone mumbled their agreement. One hand washes the other. I write checks to the Clintons and the Obamas, and the taxpayers fund my movies. How sweet is that? Laughed Harvey. You really have a nose for talent, Harvey, said the screenwriter, lifting his gin and tonic as a toast. That's what I know. Hey, Alani, sweetie, listen, I'm glad you were able to make it. Would you like to come back to my office for a minute? I have a few scripts I want you to take a look at, said Harvey. Sure, Mr. Goodman, said Alani, smiling brightly. The small gathering suddenly looked away from Harvey's hand on the small of Alani's back and toward Lucy as Harvey and Alani walked slowly back through the split-level living room and up the two steps in the terrazzo hallway to an open doorway on the other side. Where did you learn to sing like that, Lucy? Asked one of the men with a yellow sports coat and blue jeans. In the shower, mostly, laughed Lucy, flashing her superpower carefully. Mike stayed by her side, and he glanced through the glass wall. The hand-carved office door closing behind them made no sound, and in the pit of his stomach, he suddenly wished he'd never heard of Hollywood.